Good evening. This is your host, Mr. Dark, bringing you a series of some of the most terrifying, strange, and true short horror stories of crimes, murders, abductions, and experiences. You're listening to the Dark Side Diaries podcast. Candyman Murders. Dean Corll was born in 1939 in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He was a firstborn child with a strict father and protective mother. Corll's childhood would see him move around quite a bit, with his mother and father marrying and divorcing twice. He was a loner kid throughout his time in high school, but was known for being a good student overall. Corll's mother would eventually remarry and start a candy factory with her new husband around the Houston, Texas area. He would serve in the U.S. Army for a short period of time in 1964 and left on honorable discharge after serving just 10 months, where he would return to his family candy factory and continue his role as vice president of the company. In 1965, the company relocated to a location which stood directly across the street from an elementary school. Corll was known to give free candy to local children, especially to teenage boys. This got him his nickname, Candyman. Corll had a pool table brought in at the rear of the candy factory where employees and local youths would hang out. At this point, people would notice him being flirtatious with several teenage males. In 1967, one of those young males would form a close relationship with Corll. A 12-year-old named David Brooks was a regular at the candy factory. Corll would give him free candy. Brooks saw Corll as a father figure and was often given money by him if he needed it. But the relationship would change in 1969. Corll began to urge a sexual relationship between him and the now 14-year-old Brooks. Corll would give Brooks cash or gifts to allow him to perform oral sex on the youth. Brooks would eventually drop out of high school at 15 years old, and at this time Corll's family would lose the candy business and he would get a job as an electrician. In 1970, Brooks would become an accomplice to some of the most disturbing murders in Houston's history. And in winter 1971, Elmer Henley, another young teenage male, would be recruited to join as another accomplice. Between 1970 and 1973, Corll is known to have killed a minimum of 28 victims, but possibly a 29th one as well. All of his victims were males aged 13 to 20, but the majority were in their mid-teens. Most victims were abducted from the Houston Heights neighborhood. Brooks and Henley were offered $200 for any boy they could lure to Corll's apartment. An enticement they accepted. Corll's victims were lured by Brooks and Henley, typically with an offer of rides, drugs, and partying. The victims would be driven to a succession of addresses in which Corll resided between 1970 and 1973. The victims would then be restrained by either force or deception, and then tortured, raped, and killed either by strangulation or shooting with a .22 caliber pistol. Brooks stated Henley was especially sadistic in his participation in the murders committed at Schuller Street in 1972. Before Corll vacated the address on June 26th, Henley assisted Corll and Brooks in the abduction and murder of two boys, named Billy Balsh and Johnny Delone. Brooks confessed that both victims were tied to Corll's bed, and after their torture and rape, Henley manually strangled Balsh and shouted, "Hey Johnny!" and shot Delone in the forehead, with the bullet exiting through the youth's ear. Delone then pleaded with Henley, "Wayne, please stop," before he was strangled. By June 1973, Corll's appetite for killing increased dramatically, and both Henley and Brooks later testified to the rise in the level of brutality of the murders committed while Corll resided at his Lamar Drive home. Henley later compared the acceleration in the frequency of killings and the increase in the brutality exhibited by Corll towards his victims of being like a bloodlust, adding that he and Brooks would instinctively know when Corll was to announce that he needed to do a new boy, due to the fact that he would appear restless, smoking cigarettes and making reflex movements. August 8, 1973, Henley would go to Coral's home, accompanied by 19-year-old Timothy Curley and Henley's friend 15-year-old Rhonda Williams at 3 a.m. Coral was extremely angry that Henley would bring a girl to his house and told him in private that he had ruined everything. Henley explained that Williams had argued with her father that evening and didn't want to go home. Coral seemed to calm down and offered the trio beer and marijuana, which they partook in drinking and smoking it, as well as Henley and Curley sniffing paint fumes. After approximately 2 hours, Henley, Curley, and Williams all passed out. Henley awoke to find himself lying on his stomach and Coral putting handcuffs on his wrists. Coral taped his mouth shut and bound his ankles together. Curley and Williams were laying beside Henley, bound with nylon rope, gagged with adhesive tape, and lying face down on the floor. Curley was stripped naked. Coral reiterated his anger at Henley, saying, "Man, you blew it bringing that girl. I'm gonna kill you all. First, I'm gonna have my fun." Threatening to shoot Henley, he was able to calm Coral after a half hour by promising to help with torture and murder of both Williams and Curley if Coral released him. Coral ordered Henley to rape and murder Williams while he would do the same to Curley. Henley grabbed Coral's pistol, shouting, "You've gone far enough, Dean. I can't go any longer. I can't have you kill all my friends." Coral dared Henley to do it and kill him. Henley fired the gun, hitting Coral in the forehead, but the bullet failed to fully penetrate Coral's skull, and he continued moving towards Henley. Henley hit Coral with 2 more bullets. Coral, naked and injured, fled the room, hitting the hallway wall when Henley hit him with 3 more bullets in the back. Coral slid down the wall and he died where he fell, dying by the hands of one of his own accomplices. 17-year-old Henley confessed to his role in at least 28 murders, including 6 slayings he'd committed, and led investigators to unmarked graves throughout the Houston area. Brooks would give a full confession on August 9, 1973. Upon their confessions, the two would lead police to 17 murder victims buried in a rented boat shed, 4 victims buried in a woodland near Lake Sam Rayburn, 1 victim buried on a beach in Jefferson County, and at least 6 victims buried on a beach on the Bolivar Peninsula. Henley is serving a life sentence, and Brooks served a life sentence until he died on May 28, 2020, which was ruled as a COVID-19 related death. The disappearance of Dennis Martin. Dennis Martin was born on June 20, 1962. Dennis's family was from Knoxville, Tennessee, and they had a long-standing tradition of taking the male members of the family on a camping trip to the nearby Great Smoky Mountains National Park to celebrate Father's Day. June 14, 1969, Dennis, being just 6 at the time, was with his father William, grandfather Clyde, and older brother Douglas. They started their trip at Cades Cove and the group would hike to Russell Field, where they camped overnight. The following morning they'd hike to Spence Field, a popular camping spot bisected by the famous Appalachian Trail. When the group arrived at their destination, Dennis and Douglas went off to play with other campers nearby. William watched Dennis disappear behind a bush as the group of children were hiding to surprise the adults by jumping out and scaring them. After not seeing Dennis for 5 minutes, when all of the other children had returned to the campsite, William and Clyde became worried and began searching for him. William ran 2 miles along the trail, shouting his name before returning to camp. Clyde would hike to Cades Cove Ranger Station to get help, arriving at around 8:30 p.m. Wild animals such as copperhead snakes, bears, feral hogs, and bobcats inhabited the area with a landscape of steep slopes and ravines. This made the area where Dennis disappeared difficult to search through. A downpour broke out shortly after Dennis's disappearance, dropping 3 inches of rain in only a matter of hours, which washed out the trails and caused streams to flood. On the night of Dennis's disappearance on June 14th, the temperature dropped to nearly 50 degrees Fahrenheit. A major search was launched with National Park Service personnel and a separate search by the National Guard and Green Berets. Weather again played a factor, as heavy rains during the first day's search hampered efforts, and a heavy mist the next day. Up to 1,400 people were involved in the search effort, but Dennis wasn't found anywhere. By June 22nd, 56 square miles of ground had been covered. During the massive search, tracks were found from a child who was missing one shoe and the prints disappeared on the banks of a stream. A shoe and a sock were found 3 days into the search as well. Despite searchers continuing their effort for over 2 weeks, no further trace of Dennis was ever found. A $5,000 reward, equivalent to $35,000 in 2020, was offered by the family. They received a number of calls from psychics as well, but nothing ever led to a breakthrough. There are three main theories about what happened to Dennis Martin. The first being he became lost and perished from exposure to the elements or some other cause, most likely during the first night. This is the most probable theory according to park officials. The second being he was attacked by a hungry bear or other wild animal and may be dragged away. William, however, believes that Dennis was abducted by someone. This theory is based largely on an eyewitness account of a visitor to the park named Harold Key. Key reported hearing a loud scream on the afternoon that Dennis disappeared. Shortly after that, Key claimed to have seen a disheveled man covered in hair and trying to remain unseen fleeing through the woods. Key's family stated the figure had a red object slung over his shoulder, matching the clothing Dennis was wearing. But FBI investigators would dismiss this, given the sighting had taken place more than 5 miles from where Dennis had disappeared. Due to the unsuccessful search for Dennis Martin, changes have been made to the National Park Service policies on how they review and search for missing people. Still, to this day, Dennis Martin's body hasn't ever been found and is still reported as a missing person. This concludes our episode of the Dark Side Diaries. Please remember to follow, like, share, and subscribe for future episodes.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.